Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And rejoice, America, we have good martinis for conservatives today. Good news across the board in different ways. The first one obviously has some less than good connotations, but in the end, we can definitely find some good news out of this. Yesterday's crazy martini, of course, was the Guardian story reporting on the new book by author Michael Wolff, in which Steve Bannon unloads on the Trump kids, saying that Don Jr. would be cracked like an egg on national TV as part of the Russia investigation. He also said the meeting with the Russian lawyers at Trump Tower in June of 2016 was treasonous and unpatriotic. Shockingly, Jim, the president did not appreciate those comments about his children. I'm sure you're shocked by that. I'm sure the American people are shocked by that. And as a result, a little bit after we finished recording on Wednesday, the president issued a statement. It says in part, "Steve Bannon has nothing to do with me or my presidency. When he was fired, he not only lost his job, he lost his mind. Steve was a staffer who worked for me after I had already won the nomination by defeating 17 candidates, often described as the most talented field ever assembled in the Republican Party. Now that he is on his own, Steve is learning that winning isn't as easy as I make it look. Steve had very little to do with our historic victory, which was delivered by the forgotten men and women of this country. Yet Steve had everything to do with the loss of a Senate seat in Alabama, held for more than 30 years by Republicans. Steve doesn't represent my base. He's only in it for himself." And he says Steve pretends to be at war with the media, which he calls the opposition party, yet he spent his time at the White House leaking false information to the media to make himself seem far more important than he was. So, Jim, a lot of conservatives, the vast majority of conservatives, even the vast majority of Breitbart readers rejoicing with this split between Trump and Bannon over the past couple of days, and most people siding squarely with Trump, perhaps because he's in the White House and perhaps because they really can't stand Steve Bannon.
Even if you don't think that Steve Bannon is an odious human being, and I think that the evidence to support that has been stacking up like cordwood year after year. I mean, long while back, I was hearing about the way he treated people at Breitbart, temperamental, erratic, certainly verbally abusive. You could see the exodus of talent from the organization. He couldn't handle working with anyone who was not an absolute yes man. And of course, that the only person he could be respectful was to whoever was signing his paychecks. But it was simply a matter of time before the Bannon ego and the Trump ego would clash and inevitably become clear that, you know, Bannon would believe that Trump messed up this brilliant agenda he had. And, you know, Trump was surrounded by these other idiots and everyone except Bannon is an idiot and his children are idiots. And, you know, you look at what Bannon did in the White House. He was a pretty destructive force. He certainly exacerbated whatever tensions existed. He certainly had no problem using Breitbart.com to attack other members of the White House staff. Look, every White House has disagreements among the senior staff, but generally you're supposed to see these people as teammates. You're generally supposed to realize you're all working together in the same general goal, which is the success of the administration. And instead, the Trump White House, particularly in those first 6 months or so, was like Game of Thrones. Everybody was looking to stab each other in the back. And Bannon apparently had the sharpest knives and was the most devious one of all. He was the architect, or he was the, you know, behind the initial Muslim ban, so to speak, the travel ban, that got drop kicked out of the courts within about 2 days. We saw subsequent, more carefully drafted versions pass court muster later on. He pushed the president. Basically, every time Bannon told Trump to go in a certain direction, it tended to backfire into his face. And it sounds like for Trump, the last straw was the Roy Moore endorsement. Look, Steve Bannon is a I tried to write about it psychologically. I'm not even sure that, you know, there are certain key ideological points to Steve Bannon. But in the end, both his personal behavior and his overall political worldview is driven by this animosity. It's driven by this need to have an enemy. And that he is at war. He likes to talk about fighting a war. He's at war. He's going to war. You know, he's a street fighter. He loves that. He loves to street fight in a way because I'm not sure he really knows how to do anything else. I don't think he knows how to work well with others. I don't think he knows how to build an alliance or build a coalition or something like that. He just likes to fight. And it was just a matter of time before he would decide that, you know, it was time to pick on members of the Trump family earned Trump's ire. And last night, apparently on his radio show, he was like, oh, I've always said the president is a great man. Backtracking a little bit. He thinks that his son probably committed treason, but he still thinks he's a great man. So, hey, let you know, there's always that slim possibility of bygones being bygones. But I think, look, if there is a permanent wedge driven between Trump and Bannon, Trump is more likely to listen to wiser minds and heed a wiser and more productive course. And also, let's face it, Greg, we got to give credit where it's due. Yesterday, President Trump really did finally denounce a white nationalist.
All right, Jim, let's talk about our second good martini now. And this has obviously been building for some time. The Dow today crossing 25,000. Here is Christine Romans of CNN talking about this meteoric rise from 20 to 25,000 points in less than 1 year and for some of the reasons for it.
It's a psychological mark, but shows the explosive growth in stocks over the past year. The blue chips first hit 20,000 on January 6, 2017. By March, the Dow nailed 21,000. In early August, 22,000. In October, 23,000. Just 30 trading days after that mark, 24,000. Two key developments driving this eight-year-old bull market ever higher. First, President Trump's big push on tax reform. Investors cheered as Congress delivered a bill to the president's desk before Christmas. Corporations are a big winner, and Wall Street is betting companies will use their new spare cash to buy back stock and beef up their dividends.
And she says the other thing is that the markets don't even seem to care about various threats to instability, such as the North Korean nuclear crisis or even the investigation over the 2016 election. So, Jim, whenever there's good economic news or bad economic news, there's probably too much credit or too much blame given to whoever's in the White House. But the credit or blame is given nonetheless. And so I think deregulation has helped. The expectation and the optimism surrounding tax reform it continues to go now because it actually passed and became law. And happy days on Wall Street for sure.
It is, Greg. And what's more, by the way, if you're listening to this and you don't have a 401k, a Roth IRA, or a regular IRA, you probably want to think about getting one. This is not, you know, everyone's like, oh, this bull market can't last forever. Look, inevitably there will be down days and there may even be a market correction. Sometimes that can be 10-15%. But if you are not immediately retiring and you can be in the markets for, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years before you need to start withdrawing from that, maybe you want to put some money in the market and end up enjoying some of this ride. Look, this is because of a variety of factors. It's worth noting that by and large, the global economy is having a good year. Things are growing overseas. Imports and exports are doing fine. But I think they probably, in addition to the tax cut and the general, Wall Street and the business world's affinity for the Trump administration, there's also the recognition that it's not a Democratic administration. So you're not going to have some giant complicated regulation come down the pike without much warning, something like Obamacare, something like cap and trade, something like the Clean Air Rules and all the different things the Obama administration has done. Now, look, there was a decent amount of economic growth during the Obama years. The stock market did have it, but the fact that you're seeing this market take off like a rocket the way it has since last January, really since last November, is an indicator that business now feels reasonably confident that whatever comes out of the Trump administration, it's not going to be some massive new cost on them. It's not going, you know, there's going to be crazy tweets, there's going to be controversies, there's going to be fighting and everything we talked about in the first martini, but generally it's not going to be anything that's going to make it harder for them to sell their products, develop their products, make their products, distribute their products, or hire workers. So this is really good news, and I hope as many Americans possible are enjoying the prosperity.
Absolutely. Hopefully it leads to more jobs, better jobs, higher wages. And if that's the case, Trump's Twitter account might be the only thing standing in his way towards future political success. But we'll see. Jim, let's move on to our third good martini of the day. Man, it's nice to have all good martinis. We take you to Richmond, Virginia on this frigid day after the cyclone bomb passed through the Mid-Atlantic region. Of course, we got a dusting of snow, so your kids are not in school today. But nonetheless, business as usual went on in Richmond, although it wasn't all that usual today because they were drawing names out of a hat, essentially, to decide who would have control of the Virginia House of Delegates. You may remember our coverage of the Virginia elections back in November. The Democrats, unfortunately, did very, very well. They were suffering a 64-36 minority before Election Day. As of all the recounts, it was 50-49 Republicans with a dead heat in this 94th legislative district. Originally, the Democrat was declared the winner by one vote, and then the Republican challenged one of the ballots. The court said, yep, I think that was intended to be a vote for you, so it was declared a tie. His name is David Yancey. The Democrat in this race is Shelley Simons. She challenged that final vote. She was rejected on that challenge. So today, in Richmond, the Board of Elections decided to put each name into a film canister, and I guess they still make film. So they put them into the film canisters, closed the lids, put them into a bowl, and here's the exciting result from this event in Richmond today.
Madam Vice Chair, will you give the bowl a stir? As I said, I will draw one canister. Madam Vice Chair will draw a second canister. The winner will be in the first canister. The winner of House District 94 is David Yancey.
David Yancey, the Republican, wins. The Republicans have a 51-49 majority in the House, Jim. They already had a 21-19 majority in the Senate, so it's razor thin. But Republicans still control things, which means they control the agenda. And for at least 2 years, hopefully, that'll put the restraints on Ralph Northam a bit.
Yeah, I was going to say there's an old baseball player who once named Lefty Gomez who once said, "I'd rather be lucky than good." Today, Greg, we can give a hearty congratulations to the Virginia Republican Party for being lucky, if not good, managing to salvage the majority on what is effectively a coin toss rather than actually winning the race. If anyone ever tells you your vote doesn't matter, believe me, it can. Oftentimes it won't, but it can come down to something like this. I'm just kind of wondering about everybody who worked on Yancey's campaign. Do you put this on your resume? You say, so what was your strategy to winning the race for House District 94? Well, we put our name in the black container on the right of the bowl, not the left of the bowl, and that turned out to make all the difference. So congratulations to Yates. My sympathies to the Democrat. Of all the ways you could lose a race, this has to really sting. That ultimately you didn't lose. The ball did not bounce your way, so to speak. The wind picked up in your field goal attempt. Was wide right. But my suspicion is that this is going to put a little bit of the brakes on Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, probably less than we'd like. Kind of a good lesson for every lawmaker and everybody who's every incumbent. Don't sleepwalk. Don't take things for granted, because you never know when it could come down to literally picking a name out of a hat.
Wow. Yeah, that's true. As I said, a lot more interest than usual at the Board of Elections meeting today. And so Republicans, breathe a sigh of relief. But get ready for 2019, because this was a rough year and you got to do a whole lot better when the delegates and the senators are on the ballot in 2 years. So, Jim, great day. Three great martinis. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.